potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Thor, Love and Thunder, The Sea Beast, Blackbird, Moonhaven, and Stranger Things Season 4, Volume 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the entire James Bond series on Prime Video. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Since I'm going to be talking about Stranger Things this week, and there's a reason I'm talking about it this week and not last week. I know it dropped on, well, actually 3 a.m. Eastern on July 1st, and I'm offered a great opportunity beyond what most people get, in that a lot of studios and content providers will provide me with early screenings or screeners that I can watch at home. And Netflix is fantastic about that. They have a platform set up that delivers it to me with good quality. And not every piece is given to me, but they're usually pretty good about delivering to me. Now, the first part of season four of Stranger Things, I got an early look at. I think I got it about a week early. That gave me a chance to watch like 10 hours or so of the programming before I was reviewing it. Well, they did not provide early screenings for the last two episodes. And I understand that because there's a worry about spoilers. And it's not something like an episode of a TV show where you can just carve out a half hour of your day. The last two episodes of Stranger Things season four, it's 4 hours worth of programming. The first episode's like an hour and a half, and the second episode is like 2.5 hours. So it's not like you're just having to carve out an hour or 90 minutes. I mean, it's an afternoon. And because it dropped on a Friday, I'm very busy on Friday, so I wasn't able to watch it. So I had to go dark on social media because I'm like, social media is like the worst of humanity laid out, and then some good stuff too, but there's also a lot of the worst of humanities out there. And so what I did is I went dark on social media, didn't look at Twitter, didn't look at Facebook, and then I went and watched the episodes last weekend. When I signed back onto Twitter, big surprise, literally the third tweet in my timeline had a massive spoiler in it. A spoiler that would have upset me if I would have seen it. So I guess the first rule of thumb here is if you don't want something spoiled, you got to lay off of Twitter or Facebook, especially if it's buzzworthy. You know, like next week we got Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris coming out in theaters. I don't think there's going to be a massive amounts of people spoiling Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, but you certainly are going to get that with anything buzzworthy like Stranger Things. I go through a whole spoiler discussion every couple months because I think it's worth noting. Now, I've had people say to me, oh, it's not that bad. It doesn't really ruin it. And I've seen articles that explain, no, it really doesn't harm the way you enjoy the process. And I'm like, no, 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 no. You don't get to decide how someone else enjoys movies. Keep it to yourself. It's like anything. I live by the Bill and Ted motto, be excellent to each other and party on, dudes. And I'm sorry, there's a reason it's called a spoiler. Just because you don't mind it does not mean that you're not being a jerk to everybody else. And I've said this many times. This is my own little thing. Spoilers on a movie is like a fart in the elevator. You don't care. In fact, you kind of like it. Everyone likes the smell of their own brand, right? But you're being a jerk to everyone else in the elevator. Just because you don't mind your own fart doesn't mean everyone else should have to smell it. And that's what spoilers are. The real lesson here is stay off of Twitter if you don't want something spoiled. Like this week, we got Thor, Love and Thunder. If you're so busy this weekend, you're not going to chance to see it until next week. You should not be on social media, period. In less crass news, let's talk about the box office. Minions won the weekend with $107 million. That's $123 million for the long weekend, which beats the record of Transformers Dark of the Moon. And that's always, it's always nice to see a Transformers movie go down in flames. So it was a very big weekend. And then, of course, you had Top Gun still going strong with $26 million over the 3 day and $32 million over the 4 day, and that was in its sixth weekend. And of course, Elvis and Jurassic World and Black Phone are all holding up. And yeah, I know everyone's like, oh, Tom Cruise is a big movie star. I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan. All's forgiven for the couch jumping and all that stuff. Yeah, you know, where were y'all when they were making The Mummy and the Jack Reacher movies? No. There's a lot of people who are rah-rahing Tom Cruise right now are fair weather friends. I'm not defending Tom Cruise. I'm just saying, if you have your fandom, you got to fly your flag even when they're not making great stuff. But ultimately, when it looks at the box office, this is the new normal. A handful of huge releases, and which theaters are okay with. The theaters don't mind if half the movies or more than half of the movies in the theaters right now are not pulling in big numbers. The fact that Minions and Top Gun and Elvis and Jurassic World and Black Phone, the fact that those are filling theaters, they're happy with that because they make their money on popcorn. You got to look at the numbers for the year. Theatrically, I mean, the numbers for 2020 were abysmal. I mean, it was like almost, it was like 20% of what a normal box office year was. But if you look at this year compared to last year, it's doing better than 2021, but we're still only about a third of what the total box office should be for the year, and we're more than halfway through the year. That's still going to show that 2022 has a lower general box office. And I think that has to do with the middling movies that are going to streaming and more content being pushed out through the internet than through theaters, because theaters still have their place for the big tentpole releases and the event films. But a lot of people are turning to streaming just because it's available and easy. And there's nothing wrong with change. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Clerks 3, which is coming to theaters, I guess, and whatever Kevin Smith can finagle, on September 13th.
Mr. Dante!
I need an ambulance at the Quick Stop!
Saved my life, man. Wish I had a life worth saving.
What are you talking about?
Sit around and watch the same movies over and over.
I always thought you could have made a cool movie.
You're right. I'm living on borrowed time. No more watching movies.
I'm gonna make a movie!
What's the movie gonna be about?
It's about him working here.
Meta.
Everything in the script is something either me or someone I know said.
I'm not even supposed to be here today!
Look, here's the thing with Kevin Smith, and I've talked about this at length before. I was a big fan of his when I was in my 20s. But by the time I got to my 40s, I'm like, dude, you're just playing the same tunes. You're recycling the same jokes. And as interesting as it might be to see sort of that window into Kevin Smith's development of a film, Clerks would not have been as good of a movie or as much of a success if he made it in his 50s, which he's doing now. I can respect an artist for finding an audience and exploiting it. I mean, Tyler Perry does that, and I think, even though I think his stuff's crap, I respect him for finding that audience and exploiting it. But Kevin Smith, he's resigned himself to the fact that he can't do anything other than Clerks and View Askew Universe movies. Now, the next one I want to talk about is The Woman King, which opens in theaters on September 16th.
My king, the Europeans wish to conquer us. They will not stop until the whole of Africa is theirs. We must fight back for our people.
We are the spear of victory! We are the blade of freedom! We are Dahomey!
Viola Davis and Latasha Lynch as women in this tribe in Africa. We see that in movies all the time, but, you know, it's less common to see it in historical fiction. And it reminds me of, you know, like, what's the feminine guard in the Black Panther movies? I forget the name of the women soldiers, but they're like the most formidable opponent you're ever going to run into. My biggest thing is it could be way too long, and that would probably kill it. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Sea Beast and Moonhaven.
Stop it now.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and hit some stuff on streaming. The first one I want to touch on is The Sea Beast. To keep the sea safe, hunters try to rid the waters of massive sea monsters until a young stowaway shows that they might be more than mere beasts.
We'll be off to kill a monster!
Great Moor's thick with monsters.
Monsters that want to eat us!
I see a fire in her. Same fire I saw in you.
I swore I would do everything in my power to keep people safe.
You can be a hero and still be wrong.
The ocean has sent us its worst, then we'll send it right back.
This had a limited theatrical run, and Netflix does this especially when it wants to have stuff considered for award season, because obviously they're going to throw the hat in the ring for this one to be a best animated feature. They did that with Mitchell's vs. Machines last year, and that was a fantastic movie. That came out in the summer or early fall, and it managed to live well into award season. The Sea Beast is that mythical kingdom that exists where they've been hunting these massive sea beasts, these creatures, these giant crab-like monster, kraken-type creatures, and they have hunters, which are like pirates, basically, because everybody's arg and got peg legs and eye patches and stuff like that. And that's their job, is to wipe out these monsters to sort of safen the trade routes and the beach areas and the coastal cities. It's geared towards kids, and you're supposed to learn from it. And I think that's actually really kind of cool, because there's a fine line between having a message and browbeating somebody. And a lot of times a story, especially a legend type story like this, it works to have some sort of message, which is nature's more than you think it is. Just because there's an animal out there that's scary to you does not necessarily mean that it's your enemy. And like, if you were to take this and apply it to say what people have learned about sharks over the years, you know, sharks are terrifying. And the last thing I want to do is be bitten by something coming up from the deep. But the reality is they've learned more about sharks, and they're not just this mindless eating machine as they're presented in the movie Jaws. And so the sea beast allows you to think that way. And that's how people have to realize when there's any sort of large, everything from bears to wolves, you know, just because you don't want to have them running rampant in your town and you want to have some level of control, just to understand they're not just all crazy monsters. And I think that gives a really neat message. And plus there's some neat little character moments and some great little action to it. You know, the one of the main characters is this little girl who stows away on this hunter ship. It's not a pirate ship. It's a hunter ship. And she befriends one of the guys who works on it. And she's trying to stop them from killing them and to maybe understand the creatures a little bit more. And I mean, it's a charming little film. It's neat animation, because when you actually first look at it, it seems a little rudimentary, but as you watch it more, you get sucked in and you say, oh, no, the real art is in some of the simplicity of the design, but there's real depth to the animation and some real detail there that otherwise would go unnoticed. With some great action and clever writing, this is a family film that offers more than just spectacle. And you just might learn something when you're watching it. And like I said, as long as it doesn't browbeat you, and I don't think this movie does, there's a lot of good lessons to glean from it. So don't resist. Like I said, my philosophy of life is be excellent to each other. And here's a great example of, well, are you being excellent to each other? Maybe each other also includes the sea monsters. So I'm going to say the sea beast totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Moonhaven. A colony has been sent to the moon to develop a way to sustain a better life on Earth, and a series of crimes on the moon threaten its future.
The mission of Moonhaven isn't simply about solving the crushing problems of our planet. It's about solving us.
Welcome to Moonhaven.
I get that this is supposed to be our future, but you and I know, darkness finds a way.
Hasn't been a murder here in a long time. Now there are two.
Earth extremists have found a way to get an agent on the moon.
The Earthers will kill us all!
I'm a big fan of science fiction. I've been a big fan of science fiction ever since I was a little kid, even before I saw Star Wars, which completely enamored me when I was 5. As a little kid, I remember watching Saturday morning cartoons and really getting into the superheroes and that sort of thing. And I remember watching Doctor Who in the 70s. Before I really hit the Star Wars train, I loved science fiction. And I remember as a kid watching Star Trek, for example, and watching these science fiction movies like Forbidden Planet. And there are always different types of science fiction. There's sort of high concept science fiction. You know, of course, something like 2001, A Space Odyssey is very high concept. There's military science fiction, and Star Trek kind of falls into that. But really, Star Trek's more about discovery and exploration. Something like Stargate's more military science fiction. And Star Wars is political science fiction. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, I wish Star Wars wasn't so political. If you go back and look at the original Star Wars, it's absolutely political. I mean, they named the bad guy Stormtroopers, for crying out loud. How is that not political? And of course, there's politics and messages and subtext buried in everything. One of the things that has become popular, and I think this is a good thing, with streaming services, and you don't need these massive numbers, cerebral science fiction has kind of gotten a little bit of a resurgence. Cerebral science fiction was very popular in the 70s, kind of spurned on by stuff like actually Star Trek in TV, but also movies like 2001, A Space Odyssey. You saw a lot of cerebral science fiction in the 70s. And after Star Wars really got big, you know, there was a lot of pulp science fiction, which is still fun and I enjoy it. But they've been trying to make some cerebral science fiction, and there's been a bunch of attempts. Foundation on Apple TV Plus is on there, Raised by Wolves on HBO. But my problem with Moonhaven is, in its attempt to be cerebral, it is retreading every story I've seen before. I mean, you've got this almost, tribalistic older culture, this almost going back to the basics, hippy-dippy culture on the moon, which, I mean, I'm so tired of watching science fiction where people are in robes and rags and caves. And that's basically what they're doing in this Moonhaven, where they're living these huts because they're enlightened. And I'm like, I get where you're going with this, but this is done everywhere. There's nothing new about this. And the dangers and the problems that are all of the Earth and humanity come from Earth, and they've now invaded this utopia-ish, well, and like practical utopia that is on Moonhaven. And I mean, it really does try to give a cerebral science fiction, but the science, as best I could tell, the science is just as made up as anything. It doesn't have a great grounding in real science. It was boring. That's the other thing. It's boring. I thought it was going to be a neat, tense thriller, but it's just a bunch of hippies wandering around in huts. I mean, it's riddled with cliche, poorly developed characters, and science that simply makes no sense. This attempt at cerebral science fiction is a lunatic misfire. It's just, I'm all for cerebralness, but this kind of cerebralness actually isn't very smart. So I'm going to have to say that Moonhaven sucks.
It sucks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got the big movie Thor, Love and Thunder, as well as Blackbird. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the big movie of the week, and that's going to be Thor, Love and Thunder. It's the latest Marvel movie. That's right, we're still making them. No, first, before I even talk about this movie, I'm getting tired of people complaining that there's too much Star Wars and too much Star Trek and too much Marvel and too much superheroes. And there's a great meme I saw going around that says, I'm never going to apologize for that. When I grew up, it was a desert. When I was a kid, I'm talking about in the 80s, there were 3 Star Wars movies and I had to wait 6 years for them. 3 Star Wars movies. And there were a couple comic books, and then they eventually started to hash out the extended universe stuff in the 90s. But I mean, I would have loved if every 6 months there was a new Star Wars series on television, Disney Plus or not. I would have loved the fact if they kept making new Star Wars movies. I would have loved the fact that there are five Star Trek series being made currently today. Picard, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Prodigy, and Lower Decks. And I am loving it. I love the fact that there's new Doctor Who's. I love the fact that there's Marvel films and a bunch of stuff that I'd never had the opportunity to watch as a kid. It's the height of arrogance to complain that there's too much. And I remember hearing people say that a couple of weeks ago, that, well, you know, the problem with streaming, there's just too much stuff. The heck with you. Go pound sand. I love the fact that there are so many things that I almost don't have time to watch everything. That's wonderful, because I remember a day when I was longing for new stuff to watch, and I didn't have the on-demand access that I do now. This is a glory time for somebody like me. So, yep, we've got another Marvel movie, but you know what? That's great. I'm all for it. After reinventing himself post-Thanos, Thor must team up with his old girlfriend, who now wields Mjolnir, or Mjolnir, as Darcy likes to call it, to defeat a new foe capable of killing the gods themselves.
The old ex-girlfriend.
What's it been like? 3-4 years?
8 years, 7 months, and 6 days, give or take.
Am I sensing feelings?
The only ones who gods care about is themselves.
This is my vow.
All gods will die.
One of the things that I noticed at the first Thor movie that I remember thinking this might be a problem for Marvel is their cosmic stuff, which Thor was the first foray into that. The cosmic stuff, meaning the real heady science fiction, space gods and fantastic powers that just evolve. I'm not talking about a billionaire in a suit or a giant green rage monster or a super soldier. Those are pretty easy to wrap your brain around. But the cosmic stuff, the stuff that takes place in outer space, the real Stan Lee goofiness. I was worried that we're going to have a trouble with that because that is not easily digestible for the average person. But one of the things they've done is they figured out how to deliver it. They certainly can deliver it with James Gunn through the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and they can deliver it with Taika Waititi in the Thor movies. And look, it's a Taika Waititi movie. By now you should know what you're getting with his stuff. You saw Thor Ragnarok. He's kind of a goofy guy. And you get the Thor Ragnarok pop delivery in this movie. And it absolutely works with some great music licks from the 80s and some classic rock. And it looks like an album cover. The entire movie feels like an 80s album cover. And that's okay because you can wrap your brain around it because they go to some really bizarre places in this. But the fact that Taika Waititi can deliver that and make it digestible is great. But it's not all just goofiness. And that's the big thing with Thor, in particular this movie. He manages to give a real heart and soul to this movie. There's some very tender moments. And there's some very real human moments as well. Especially with the backstory of Jane Foster, who's played by Natalie Portman. And the whole fact that Thor himself is still recovering from all the trauma he faced in Infinity War and Endgame, where he's carrying guilt and negative emotions and the baggage of his people and just the personal baggage of himself. There's a lot of depth to the story here. It's not just silly and goofiness. And that's the big reason why I like this movie. It's at perfect balance. Taika Waititi delivers another hilarious and thrilling cosmic adventure, but it also has a surprising amount of poignancy and heart. And that's what makes this movie and some of the other films that are cut from the same cloth work. Watching this movie makes me realize you have a whole history. You could do more Thor movies, and you can tie them into Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain Marvel and now Ms. Marvel. On TV, you know, you're just getting the origin for her and sort of her background. But this is the cosmic stuff, and Taika Waititi is a master at that, and I hope that they can find somebody who can deliver as well in more stuff with this crazy stuff that's going on in outer space that is weirdly relatable, and that's what makes this movie great. So I'm going to have to say Thor: Love and Thunder totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Blackbird. This is a new series on Apple TV+. While in prison for dealing in drugs and arms, a young charismatic inmate agrees to befriend a serial killer to learn where he has buried the bodies.
We would like you to transfer to another prison and befriend someone to elicit a confession.
We suspect that this man killed 14 women, but we only have one of the bodies.
Larry has vivid dreams.
Tell me about him.
In my dreams, I kill women. They're just dreams.
Maximum security specializing in the criminally insane.
Not for all the money in the world.
How about freedom?
This says it's inspired by a true story. I don't know what that means, because here's the thing. In Hollywood terms, based on a true story usually means it's loosely based. When they start saying inspired by a true story, you know, even the people making the movie or TV series are like, yeah, this is really straying far from it. It's not as bad as when they say inspired by actual events. And I've seen those, and that's just complete hogwash. Might as well just make it up at that point. But that's the sort of selling point on Blackbird. It's an interesting idea because it's told in two parts. There's these two converging storylines. One's wrapped around Taron Egerton, who he's best known. He was in Eddie the Eagle, and most probably famously, he was in the Kingsman movies and also played Elton John in Rocketman. He's that drug dealer who ends up going to prison, and it's told from his point of view, but then it's told from the point of view of the serial killer as he's investigated and arrested and brought to prison. Greg Kinnear plays one of the detectives going after him, and Paul Walter Hauser plays the serial killer, and he's fantastic. I mean, he is creepy and compelling in this movie. So I was completely disinterested in Taron Egerton's role. I could care less. Whenever he was on a screen or they were dealing with his story, I'm rolling my eyes. I mean, the most interesting part of his side of the story is Ray Liotta plays his father. So it's just nice to see Ray Liotta on the screen again, since we're not going to be seeing much more of him anymore because he passed away in the middle of shooting something. But the story of the serial killer I found fascinating. That's the one where I couldn't take my eyes off. That's the one that made me want to go to the next episode. And eventually the two storylines converge, because that's the whole point, is to get them to meet in prison. But it's clearly meant to be Taron Egerton's series, but it's Paul Walter Hauser who completely steals the show on this. So it's weirdly uneven, and uneven at the times where it's probably not supposed to be uneven at all. But it plays so much better as getting into the mind of the serial killer than trying to feel sorry for a guy who steals drugs and guns. I got 10 years from dealing drugs and guns. I don't care. You were dealing drugs and guns. You don't have much sympathy for me. So it's a mixed bag, because the secondary story is far more compelling. But this still is a chilling look at the unpleasantness of prisons all around and the people who serve time. So I'm going to have to say that, while not perfect and has some lumps to it, Blackbird still kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we're going to be talking about Stranger Things Season 4, Volume 2, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the James Bond films on Prime Video. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the reviews with Stranger Things Season 4, Volume 2. With all the kids scattered in different groups, 11 in the gang must fight against a demon from the Upside Down who plans to take over our reality.
Hawkins will fall.
My friends need me.
You're not ready.
He's not going to stop. Not until he's taken everyone.
But I have this terrible feeling. It might not work out for us this time.
It is over. Now I just want you to watch.
I know I talked about the first part of the season a couple weeks ago. I wanted to finish talking about this because I'm well aware that most fans and people who are excited about Stranger Things have already seen this. This is almost no old news to some people, but wanted to give my final thoughts on it. I'm not going to engage in spoilers either. I will say this. There is a fifth season coming. Now, if you haven't heard, I mean, it's being advertised. I mean, even Netflix is tweeting about it. It's public knowledge that there will be a fifth season. And that's something you get when you definitely know you're going to move in. Because like the first season of Stranger Things, they didn't know if they were going to do a second season. They didn't realize it was going to be so popular. And then the second season did well. And then I remember when that was being developed, they're like, well, how long are these kids going to be kids? But that's not due on Netflix for another 2 years, which means the kids are going to be 2 years older. I mean, they're going to be, I think that Millie Bobby Brown's going to be pushing 20, if not 21, by the time they're releasing the fifth season. So there is a very limited amount of time. Already, the actors and the kids have grown up considerably. If only they could just put a different haircut on Will, because he looks ridiculous. But I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a very satisfying end. And one of the things I think actually made it work was the long-form programming. The fact that the final episode was 2.5 hours long and the penultimate episode was 1.5 hours long. It's almost like it's a string of movies. And they're just continuing on. And I felt like that last 2.5 hour episode was the endgame version of Stranger Things season 4. Not everything's tied up in a neat little bow at the end of this. There's still some loose ends that they're absolutely going to address in season 5. And supposedly that's going to be the final season because these kids are going to be graduating high school and they're going to be 32. But I really have liked this season. My favorite season. If you look at the holistic season, my favorite season, season 3. There was just something about the pop 80s version of a summer 1985 that it really hit like all those pressure points. You had the mall and you had the fashions and you had the colors and you had the pool. Cause by the, you know, people think the 80s looked a certain way. It didn't get until it was the mid 80s that fashions really caught up with the look of the 80s. You know, 81, 82 does not look like 1985 or 86. And one of the things I find interesting about this season is, and you heard this in news cycling through, people talking about how expensive, how many, like, what is it, like $20 million an episode? I don't remember what the number is, but it's a ridiculous number. And I was talking to a family member during 4th of July. And I said, well, it's actually, I wasn't that impressed with the effects. It didn't look like they spent a lot of money on that. And she's like, oh, well, there's like a plane crash and one thing. I go, okay, they have their moments. But I don't see $20 million worth of effects going into these episodes. In fact, there's entire sections of the episode that don't use any sort of effects at all. The reason it's so expensive for the Stranger Things season 4 is because there are 16 above the line credits in that movie. That's 16 people that are making a major paycheck as an actor in this movie. Not, that's not even counting what the Duffer brothers and Sean Levy are pulling in from this. But you've got all the kids, the original kids, then you've got the older kids, you know, like Natalie and Steve, and then you've got the parents, you know, like Winona Ryder and David Harbour. I mean, like Winona Ryder, when she made the first season of Stranger Things, I'm sure she was just like, hey, I'm happy to have the work. And by the time she got to the fourth season, she's like, I've been around the block. I know how this stuff works. Yeah, I'm going to have higher salary during the later seasons, and she's probably making a good amount of money. And she's not stupid because she's in her 50s. She's like, well, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be acting. I'm just glad to have a resurgence in popularity. So the reason it's so expensive is because there's like 12.5 people that have to be paid. It probably costs $10, $15, $20 million just to get people to walk on the set. So don't expect a sci-fi effects spectacular with this, even though it is impressive. The big push of the Stranger Things storyline is the humanity and the friendships. And it's these kids that keep getting stuck in the middle and having to do what they have to do, sometimes to their own detriment. If you're one of those people who broke up with the show in the second season, push through it and, you know, get through all the episodes. You got to watch it all, but get through the last season and get ready for season 5 because it's going to be fantastic. So I'm going to have to say this last part of Stranger Things totally rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I wanted to put a spotlight on Prime Video because every single James Bond movies, the canon ones, the ones from Eon Productions, are available on Prime Video. And we've seen it flip-flop back and forth. I remember there was at one time there was a whole bunch of them available on Netflix, and then there were a bunch available on Prime. And what had happened was last year, Amazon bought an ownership stake in the James Bond franchise. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have theatricals anymore, but when they reboot after the Daniel Craig's, you know, they've been wrapped, well, they are wrapped up. Once they rebooted, a lot of people are wondering, you know, is it going to go to theaters? It'll still go to theaters, but this opens it up for them to do spinoff stories. You know, they always wanted to do like, I remember they were talking about doing a Moneypenny story. You could do that as a Prime Video series, you know, along the level of something like the Jack Ryan series they have. So all the James Bond movies, everything from Dr. No to No Time to Die, are available.
The name's Bond. James Bond.
Tell me what you know of James Bond.
He's a 00 and a wild one.
Charming, sophisticated secret agent.
Who is also licensed to kill.
You noticed.
Now, if you want the fringe ones, the extras, if you want Never Say Never Again, which is just a remake of Thunderball, or if you want the original 1967 Casino Royale, they are on Prime Video, but you're going to have to pay $3 or $4 to watch them as a rental. They're not there for free. But if you want to do a Bondathon, if you want to watch the 50 hours of James Bond movies that they have, you can do that. And they're all on there. Unfortunately, they don't have like a really good portal set up to watch them. Like one of the things that Disney does that's really impressive is they have a Marvel portal, and it gives all the movies and all the TV series. And one of the things they do with that is they put them in the order of the chronology of the series. So, like, the first one's Captain America. And then, like, Captain Marvel, because that takes place in the 90s. And it puts them in the order of the timeline. That's one of the things that Disney has really cultivated with their owned properties. And I hope that Prime organizes it a little bit better. But yeah, if you like James Bond movies and you want to just keep watching James Bond movies, you've got dozens of hours of them. And that's fantastic because otherwise you're going to have to spring for the $150 to $200 box set of Bond at 50 and then pick up Spectre and No Time to Die. Of course, my favorite James Bond, I got to say, while I appreciate Sean Connery because he was the original and he kind of brought this ruggedness to him, I still have to say I really like Roger Moore. I grew up with Roger Moore, and that to me is always going to be my first Bond. I never like to say my favorite James Bond movie, because how do you compare From Russia with Love to Die Another Day? I mean, they're made in totally different eras, and so I like to look at it and say my favorite Sean Connery movie is From Russia with Love. My favorite Roger Moore movie is For Your Eyes Only. My favorite Timothy Dalton movie is The Living Daylights. My favorite Pierce Brosnan movie is actually Die Another Day because it's completely bonkers and fun. And then my favorite Daniel Craig movie is Casino Royale. And I don't count George Lazenby because he was a lousy Bond. But yeah, it's great to see that on the service. And again, if you just want to go back and watch all the James Bond movies, they're available on Prime right now.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available on disc this week, we've got Everything Everywhere All at Once. Also available on streaming, we've got The Bad Guys finally hitting Peacock, as well as the 80s and 90s Batman movies. And then HBO Max has finally brought in Last Night in Soho. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Paws of Fury and Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.